Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program Number 569, titled The Triumph of Treason. This is being recorded on September 10th of the year 2006. This program is going to be a little different from the one that I'd originally intended to do. I was going to do another in the sequence of programs dealing with the Lebanon War and the whole Israeli-Palestinian issue, something that I do not like to talk about because of the emotional venality and the plethora of disinformation that surrounds that issue. But in as much as the fifth anniversary of September 11th is upon us, specifically tomorrow, I thought I would do a program in recognition of same. Now, I've done an awful lot of work on September 11th. I can't refer listeners strongly enough to the archived material available at www.spitfirelist.com. There is a huge, huge treasure trove of material, not just about September 11th, but about the focal point of my efforts, international fascism through the ages. Listeners are emphatically encouraged to take advantage of that. Indeed, much of this broadcast will be to a certain extent referential. The title of the program, Triumph of Treason, is the title of a book written in 1944 by Pierre Coe, who was the French Minister of Aviation in the 1930s for the Social Front government of Léon Blum. What he talks about, what Pierre Coe talks about in this 1944 book, is the deliberate subversion of France in the run-up to World War II and during the German invasion of France in World War II by a pro-fascist / pro-Nazi fifth column in France who saw fascism and Nazism as a defense against socialism, against democracy, against reduced profits, and who were in business with the top German industrialists and financiers, and who saw those business relationships as more important than national interest and real patriotism. These elements and corresponding elements within the police, the military, and the Catholic Church, which is very influential in France, deliberately subverted the military resistance to the German invasion, and that's one of the reasons why France collapsed so quickly in 1940 during the German invasion. There is a strong analogy between the French Fifth Column that subverted France in the run-up to World War II and a Fifth Column that subverted the United States, Freudian slip, in the run-up to September 11th. The Fifth Column in this country is composed of elements that have strong economic connections with the powerful economic interests that backed Al-Qaeda and the September 11th attacks. That Fifth Column also involves Nazi elements, which are overtly hostile to this country, and significant elements of the so-called progressive sector, which have, to a large extent, simply swallowed the Nazi and fascist line about not only September 11th, but about a lot of other things as well. I want to refer listeners to, among other programs, For the Records 454, 55, and 56, which are compendia about some of the work I've done on September 11th, and also For the Records 462 and 464. Those last two programs deal with the strong links between the milieu investigated in the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th, 2002, and a company called PTEC. The milieu of PTEC and the milieu of the Operation Green Quest raids of March of 2002 are one and the same. Operation Green Quest was the interagency effort initially directed at interdicting terrorist funding, in particular terrorist funding coming from elements here in the United States. PTEC is a high-tech company that developed the threat assessment software for the Air Force, the FAA, NORAD, and also, by the way, not incidentally, the Department of Energy, which oversees the nuclear power plants. The PTEC company basically is a company that was financed and to a considerable extent supervised by elements associated with Al-Qaeda, the Muslim Brotherhood, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Hamas, and related Islamic fascist organizations. The single most important name, Yaqub Mirza, the fellow who set up all of the organizations that were raided on March 20th of 2002, but was never busted himself. Yaqub Mirza was a key director of PTEC. He also was described as having a very close relationship with the FBI. Yaqub Mirza has never been touched. There are strong links between not only the milieu of PTEC, which is the same as the milieu of Operation Green Quest, or the targets of Operation Green Quest, but there are strong links between that milieu and some of the most important names in the Republican Party, including Grover Norquist, Karl Rove, George W. Bush, although I think he was largely out of the loop in terms of really understanding what was going on. One could not exaggerate the degree of relationship between the SAR network and the SAFA Trust, the elements targeted by the March 20th, 2002 Green Quest raids, PTEC, and the Republican Party. If you take the March 20th, 2002 raids and follow the tentacles going in different directions, one goes all the way back to the Third Reich and former Abwehr agent Yosef Nada, who heads up Bank al-Taqwa, and another tentacle runs in the direction of the GOP, the Islamic Institute of Karl Rove, Grover Norquist, and Bush, political ally, and BC's and Harkin Energy Director Talat Altman. Another tentacle goes in the direction of PTEC, that developed the threat assessment software for the Air Force, the FAA, and NORAD. And I suspect that PTEC, which has yet to be properly investigated, may very well account for the anomalous performance of air defense units on September 11th. Before I launch into the subject material directly, a couple of more preparatory remarks. One of the many ironies in connection with September 11th is the fact that many elements of the so-called progressive sector, who finally embraced the conspiracy thing, so to speak, and predictably have gotten most of it wrong, the so-called progressive sector is looking at September 11th as a provocation. In certain respects, it is very similar to one, but it's something much, much worse. I think that one of the very few things that the Bush administration has gotten right is that this is like World War II. This is World War III. It's actually an extension of World War II. What they haven't got right is that we're going to lose, and I mean just so. We are going to lose, and this country and most of the people in it are going to be destroyed. And also that the Bush administration is actually in bed with the underground Reich and with the elements that are conducting the assault. That is not unlike the behavior of the French Fifth Column in the run-up to World War II. By the way, a couple of chapters of the book Triumph of Treason are now available for download from the Spitfire website. The book is not yet available in its entirety. It's a tough book to get processed, but parts of it are available. And just as the French power elite subverted France, so too elements of this country's power elite have subverted the United States for various reasons. Part of it's just protecting their money. They don't want to disturb their business relationships. Some of it is because, as Grover Norquist said, he wants to drown government. He wants to destroy government. Basically, that's a statement of treason. Some of the fifth column, too, are elements of the so-called progressive sector whose unconscious racism and cultural chauvinism cannot imagine that Arabs and Muslims can be evil. Part of accepting someone as an equal is to recognize the full possibility of human capabilities with that person, including being evil as hell. Plus, there's an element of, frankly, cultural chauvinism that goes along with that racism that a lot of the progressive sector manifests towards Arabs and Muslims. They really cannot imagine that their beautiful little brown-skinned brothers and sisters could program computers, wage war, fly airplanes, conduct covert operations, or beat white people at their own game. They really can't imagine that such a thing could take place. Well, such a thing can take place. The Muslim Brotherhood, the targets of Operation Green Quest, Yosef Nada, they're evil as hell, and they should be annihilated. But they're not inferior. Although I oppose them with every fiber of my being, I have great respect for them. They're very good at what they do, and they're a hell of a lot better at what they do than an awful lot of the people who are supposedly opposing them are at what they do. So in terms of evaluating the anomalous performance of air defense units on September 11th, bear in mind that the computerized threat assessment software architecture, that's redundant, yes, but it was developed by the people who launched the attacks. It was developed by the Muslim Brotherhood, by Al-Qaeda and its offshoot, or the and other offshoots of the Muslim Brotherhood, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Hamas, and others. And in addition to the treason of powerful elements in this country and around the world, we're also going to be celebrating the efforts of private citizens, because indeed, one of the reasons that the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th, 2002 took place was because of the efforts of two private citizens. One of them was the heroic John Loftus, who's a frequent guest on this program. It was his investigation of Sami Al-Arian, one of the primary officials of Palestinian Islamic Jihad, an Islamic fascist group that uses the Nazi salute, that is an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood, and that also Palestinian Islamic Jihad and Sami Al-Arian are heroes to the so-called progressive sector. Sami Al-Arian has been lionized as a political martyr and a hero of the resistance on the Pacifica Network. In fact, he's a stone Nazi killer. But it was the investigation into Sami Al-Arian that led initially to the FBI and other federal agencies investigating what developed into the SAR network. Also, in addition to John Loftus, we're going to be celebrating the efforts of Rita Katz, a private citizen, a woman who was originally an Iraqi-born Jew who fled first Iraq and then later Israel. She began investigating some of the Islamist funding fronts in the United States, initially in connection with organizations like Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, but very quickly her efforts, conducted from public records, led to the discovery of the SAR network and the Safa Trust. That is the point of intersection between Bank al-Taqwa and the Muslim Brotherhood, the Republican Party, and al-Qaeda, and the milieu of PTEC. But Rita Katz does not get the credit she deserves, I suspect, in particular for the right wing and much of the so-called progressive sector. The mere fact that she's a Jew would do it, because the anti-Semitism, the socialism of fools, is rife in the United States. But Rita Katz was a private citizen, and John Loftus is a private citizen. If their efforts as heroic private citizens had not been neutralized by the fifth column in this country, both right and left, and in the corridors of power, meaning the Bush administration and related interests, then we would not be witnessing what we are witnessing here on this fifth anniversary of September 11th, which is the triumph of treason. I also want to stress that much of the reason for cover-ups in a lot of these conspiracies is quite mundane. Basically, people want to protect their interests. Say you're an Air Force officer or an FBI officer. You've made it to GS-14. You want to make it to GS-18. But if there's a screw-up, you can't talk about it because it'll prevent your professional advancement. The extent to which that go-along-to-get-along or get-along-to-go-along mentality prevails within the federal government, like all large institutions, should not be underestimated. With that caveat, let's investigate the triumph of treason. And again, the archives, as available on the Spitfire website, are of paramount importance. The New York Times of Thursday, August 3rd of 2006, has the following article by Philip Sheenan. It's datelined Washington, August 2nd. Headline, New Tapes Disclose Confusion Within the Military on September 11th. I suspect that much of this confusion came from the fact that the threat assessment software architecture for the FAA, the Air Force, and NORAD was developed by the very people who were performing the attacks. Newly disclosed tapes offer evidence of the widespread confusion within the military as the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks were being carried out, further undermining claims by the Pentagon that it moved quickly to try to intercept and shoot down one or more of the hijacked jets. When matched with the timeline of the attacks, the tapes make clear that information about the hijackings was slow to reach the military on September 11th, and that much of the information that did reach Air Force commanders was faulty. The tapes were provided under subpoena to the independent commission that investigated the September 11th attacks, and parts of them had previously been made public by that commission. But the full collection of nearly 30 hours of tapes from the North American Aerospace Defense Command, or NORAD, were released by the Pentagon last year to Michael Bronner, a producer on the recent film United 93, who described them in detail in an article posted this week on the website of Vanity Fair magazine. The website includes links to excerpts from the actual tapes. The tapes demonstrate that for most of the morning of September 11th, the airspace over New York and Washington was essentially undefended, and the jet fighters scrambled to intercept the hijacked planes were involved in a fruitless chase for planes that had already crashed, skipping down. The September 11th Commission subpoenaed the tapes and other evidence after the panel's investigators determined that material had been improperly withheld by NORAD, which was responsible for air defense. Members of the Commission said the tapes demonstrated that the Pentagon's initial account of its actions on September 11th was wrong, and that some military officers might have intentionally provided false statements to the Commission. Well, I suspect that we will never know precisely what happened within the bowels of the Air Defense Command on September 11th, but the fact that people who are generally discounted as incapable of fooling white people, incapable of programming computers, incapable of developing threat assessment software architecture that might have subverted the Air Force, people that are viewed as incapable of fooling white people, basically Arabs and Muslims, were in charge of the threat assessment software. They were the same people who were launching the attacks. They were part of the Fifth Column, and they had friends in high places. And one of the places where they had friends was within the corridors of economic power surrounding Washington, D.C. And it was at 555 Grove Street in Herndon, Virginia, that a powerful network of businesses and Islamic charities with strong links to powerful economic interests and to political interests such as George Bush, Karl Rove, and Grover Norquist was to be found. The 555 Grove Street building was the headquarters for the SAR Network, S-A-A-R, and for the overlapping Safa Trust. It was this milieu that was targeted by the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th, 2002. Talat Otman, a member of the Norquist Rove Islamic Institute, the place where the GOP meets the Muslim Brotherhood and the terrorists of Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and PIJ, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, that was Grover Norquist Islamic Institute. And on April 4th, of 2002, Talat Otman interceded with then-Treasury Secretary O'Neill on behalf of the elements that had been targeted by the March 20th, 2002 raids. Those raids were largely as a result of the investigative efforts of John Loftus and the aforementioned Rita Katz, and Rita Katz was using public information. We're now going to go to Rita Katz's book called Terrorist Hunter, published in 2003. This book was originally published by someone whose author credit was anonymous. That was Rita Katz, and this is a division of HarperCollins. Rita Katz published under the name of Anonymous because she has a husband and children, and she was afraid of retribution. She has since come public with a 60 Minutes piece. And what Rita Katz is talking about here is when the Operation Green Quest Task Force finally met with her to access her information. We join Rita Katz and Terrorist Hunter and on page 313. I was expecting the usual team of two, three investigators tops. To my surprise, Mark arrived with seven people in tow, all meticulously dressed in suits. There were Green Quest agents, IRS agents, and agents from Customs' Sterling, Virginia office, which had the jurisdiction over Herndon and 555 Grove Street. David Kane, an agent from the Sterling office, a tall, thin man with a kind expression, was among the group. He'd been with Customs for 3 years, and like Mark, he too had had no experience with counterterrorism until Green Quest, but he would later become pivotal in this investigation. I asked Jerome to join us. We arranged another desk to accommodate the large group, and I began briefing them on 555. I was impressed. Sending eight people to meet me meant that they were serious. In 1999, I was approached by two agents of the FBI Virginia office who asked for information on Barzinji and other SAR directors. By the way, Jamal Barzinji was one of the terrorist elements targeted by the Operation Green Quest raids. He also was a financial contributor to Grover Norquist Islamic Institute and was represented, like many other terrorists, by Grover Norquist, arguably the most important right-wing Republican lobbyist in existence. Continuing. Speaking of a relationship with this task force, Rita Katz writes, "We've met. I worked with them for a few months. The FBI agents investigated and even interviewed some of the 555 people in the presence of their lawyers. Similarly to so many others, The FBI investigation on 555 Grove Street slowly faded away. To date, nothing happened with it. Maybe this time I thought with Green Quest it would be different. I was highly motivated to give them the SAR story and to persuade them that it was very important. We sat for 6 hours. I explained that the SAR network was a network of think tanks, charities, non-profit, and for-profit companies, some 100 in all, based at 555 Grove Street. I explained who Suleiman and Saleh al-Raji were. By the way, those are two powerful, wealthy Saudis who helped to fund not only this network, but also PTEC. I told the agents how I'd first encountered 555 Grove Street when I looked into Sami al-Aryan and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and when I was studying Hamas front groups. With HLF, the Al-Aqsa Educational Fund, WISE, ICP, and many other Islamic charities linked to terrorism, I told them, there was always some connection to the SAR network. My briefing to this point, as I unwrapped the story in a chronological order, was focused on the ties between SAR and the Palestinian organizations Hamas and PIJ. Interesting by itself, but not GreenQuest's top priority, namely Al-Qaeda. So I introduced a Tariq Hamdi story to them and elucidated his ties with Sami al-Aryan, with the IIIT, that's the International Institute for Islamic Thought, and with bin Laden and his satellite phone. This latter story astonished them. Then I pulled out my copies of Wadi al-Hajj's telephone books. None of the agents even knew who al-Hajj was, so I explained to them who he was and what he did. Then I showed them Saleh al-Raji's name and number in both of al-Hajj's books. The agents were speechless as I continued to brief them. At the end of my presentation, I reiterated, quote, "The first thing you need to do is go to Tampa, Florida, as quickly as you can," unquote. John Canfield could help them down there, but he was leaving Florida for his day job any day now. In Tampa, you can get all the stuff that I don't have. The FBI there has been working on Sami al-Aryan for long years. They've got documents, videotapes of the SAR people in ICP conferences, copies of checks given to Sami by SAR, letters, crucial information for your investigation. You need to go there before Canfield leaves, and he'll be able to lead you through the maze of compiled information and tell you what material you need and where you can find it. Without him, it'll take you forever. Then, when you get back, get in touch with the FBI agents who worked on this a couple of years ago. They, too, have a good amount of information they gathered on SAR, which they may share with you. The task force went to Florida, as I'd suggested, and Mark called as soon as they'd returned. I knew better than to ask them for what they'd gotten there. I'd been working with the government for years, and the rules were clear to me. I giveth, it taketh away. End of story. Quote, "Remember you told me about a tape where Sami is introduced as Palestinian Islamic Jihad's representative and where he collects money for Palestinian Islamic Jihad," Mark said. "Can you make a copy of that tape for me?" Naturally, I told him I would, but why would he need the tape from me? They'd just been in Tampa where this and many other tapes are kept. I guess they didn't have time to copy all the material, I thought. A few days later, Mark called and asked me for copies of FBI and INS affidavits I told him about. That was even more bizarre, but I faxed them to him. Later that day, Dave Kane called me. "You said you had transcripts of Barzinji and al-Awani in ICP conferences," he said. "Yes. Could I get them from you?" "Sure." "Also, you mentioned having copies of checks from IIIT to Sami al-Aryan. Can you fax me those?" "Of course," I said, "I'd be more than happy to help you guys, but the copies I have of the checks are of poor quality and are barely legible. The FBI in Tampa must have much clearer copies and probably many more checks than I do. Why don't you call them and ask them to fax you their copies of the checks?" "I guess you're right," unquote. There was something funny in his voice. "Can you please make copies of these checks as best you can and FedEx them to me anyway?" unquote. These requests continued for some time, and I was gradually able to figure out what had happened in Florida. I knew the players. I knew the FBI team in Tampa well. These were the people who'd put me under investigation. These were the people who'd investigated John Canfield and kicked him off Sammy's investigation. John Canfield, I suspect, is a pseudonym here for John Loftus. They provided next to no help to Lorraine, the INS immigration attorney who'd come to me for help on her investigation after she'd come up dry with the FBI in Tampa. I didn't expect much of that team of people, but I couldn't have dreamed how bad it would be for Green Quest. The Green Quest agents did meet with Canfield, who told them exactly what they should look for at the FBI facilities and where they'd be able to find it. Unfortunately, he didn't have any documents in his possession. He'd had to surrender everything to the FBI when he was dismissed from the case. But he'd continued to play ball with the FBI whenever they called him for information, and so he took the Green Quest team to the FBI headquarters in Tampa and introduced them to the investigation's new head, Jerry. The Green Quest agents explained to Jerry what they were doing and asked him for the pertinent information on SAR and their ties to Sammy. They asked him for the material obtained in the raids on Sammy Alarion's ICP and WISE. They were told that Sammy was under FBI investigation. The material the FBI had on Sammy was therefore confidential. Green Quest couldn't get any of it. Remember that we are talking months after 9/11. The Green Quest agents tried to explain that there was no competition between them and the Tampa Task Force. They only wanted the information relating to their investigation, not general information on Samuel Arion. So Jerry asked them to submit a detailed, written report on Green Quest's investigation, explaining exactly which material they needed from the FBI and why they needed it. That activity took up an entire afternoon of their visit in Tampa. We're going to continue with this narrative on the other side of the broadcast. Again, the anonymous here is Rita Quest. This is an account, a partial account, of her dealings with government agents and her steering them quite correctly in the direction of the SAR network and also the overlapping PTEC network. You bust the SAR network properly and you not only knock out the Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and PIJ, Palestinian Islamic Jihad funding apparatus in this country, but you uncover their links to the corridors of power, people like George Bush, Karl Rove, and Grover Norquist, as well as the links running back in the direction of the underground Reich and people like Youssef Nader. And I also suspect that if you properly investigate this, you also will be able to explain just what the hell was going on with air defense units on September 11th. Unfortunately, this hasn't been properly investigated, and so the PTEC software remains in place. And among the things that PTEC was developing the threat assessment software architecture for was the Department of Energy, and they run the nuclear power plants. We're dealing with the triumph of treason, and when that triumph is made manifest in its full measure, you wait till a nuclear power plant goes, folks. You think September 11th was bad. Well, it was bad, but that's just a warm-up. And what, pray tell, is in the PTEC threat assessment software architecture developed for nuclear power plants? Well, I guess we'll find out someday. You do access the websites available, the Spitfire website, linked websites from WFMU, websites with documents, websites with books, or URLs with documents, URLs with books, URLs with sound files. There's also a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing. If you don't like what you hear, there's no better way of fighting back than supporting the work that I'm doing. And indeed, as we approach the anniversary of September 11th, at the risk of seeming a little contrary, ultimately, folks, you're the ones who are going into the fire. You're the ones who are going to experience the full measure of the triumph of treason. You might want to make sure that you are not participating in that treason by being passive. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record Program 569, The Triumph of Treason, being recorded on September 10th of the year 2006. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.